sorry about this, the mic was off. If the members remember, we have been dealing with this issue for quite some time now. The issue of looking at law reform in relation to adult sex work was among the resolutions made during the 2015 roundtable discussions. The multi-party women's caucus promised the women were part of those roundtable discussions that there will be follow-ups on the resolutions that were made. On the 17th August 2016, the multi-party women's caucus convened a session with a purpose of finding out progress made in terms of law reform in relation to adult sex work in South Africa. The following stakeholders were part of the session and made presentations. There were the CGE, Commission on Gender Equality, SWET, Department of Justice, South African Law Reform Commission, and Parliament Legal Service on the decriminalization of sex work. On this day as well, the Multi-Party Women's Caucus pledged its commitment in ensuring that the debate on adult sex work is pushed forward to finality. Honorable members and guests, during the engagement on this day of 17 August 2016, the Law Reform Commission reported that they submitted their final report on adult prostitution to the Minister of Justice in August 2014, and as such were unable to comment on the contents of the report. It then became apparent that there was a need to convene a follow-up session with the Department of Justice in order to get more clarity on the issue of adult sex work. We are here today, and the Deputy Minister of Justice is here to brief us about the current status quo and way forward in relation to adult sex work. In conclusion, even although this is a public meeting, there are various stakeholders in attendance, but at this meeting, stakeholders will not be allowed to participate by asking questions and or making comments. Therefore, I'm going to allow the Deputy Minister to give us a presentation on this. Deputy Minister.
Chair, thank you very much, and good afternoon to everybody, and thanks for the opportunity to come and report on the issues that you had questions about last time. It is correct that the Law Reform Commission, well, firstly, the Law Reform Commission is an independent statutory body chaired by a judge. At the time of the first commission of the report, it was Judge Mandisa Meyer as the chairperson. She's, however, no longer there, as she is at vice president or acting president of the Supreme Court of Appeal. So it's currently chaired by the vice chair, Judge Colopin. They had been tasked with the issue of conducting an investigation and proposing amendments some time ago. They submitted a report, it's dated August 2014. I think it was given to the minister and myself towards the end of the year, about October 2014. We had then, the minister and I then wanted the commission to re-look at certain issues. So it's not actually correct that that was the final report. I think the final report is June 2015, which we got a bit later than that, or after that date. We want to put the report into the public domain, but we are part of a executive collective. In other words, the matter has to go to cabinet. We did approach Cabinet for approval to release the report into the public domain, but Cabinet, however, felt that it was important because the issue is very controversial. It's not simply a question of black or white, this option or that option. There's a whole variety of different processes that could be followed. Cabinet wanted us to, when the report is released, for there to be a recommended position from the executive. And that process with Cabinet has not yet been finalized. We are hoping it will be finalized before the end of the year, but currently it has not been finalized. So that is the problem that we have with releasing the report. There is no intention to hold on to it. We want to put it into the public domain. This is the report. I think somebody might have shown it to you, Ms. Clark might have shown it to you last time. It is very thick. A lot of work has been done. But we are waiting to get Cabinet approval for a proposed position. And basically the options are continued criminalization or some kind of minor amendments, maybe, if you could put it that way. For example, ensuring that there's more diversion of sex workers who get put into the criminal justice system. The other would be the full decriminalization, and then different forms of regulation that would apply. The third option, main option, is what the part is partial criminalization, or what's known as the Swedish option, because it's been followed in Sweden, where the sellers of sex are not criminalized, or the sale of sex is not criminalized, but the buying of sex is. So those are really the three options being looked at. But Chair, you had asked me that in terms of enriching the debate, that it may be useful for a presentation to be made on what is happening in other countries. And so I have asked Ms. Clark from the Law Reform Commission to come back, and she is able to do a presentation on that, and there is a document, or to speak to that rather, and there is a document on what the situation is in other countries that she can address.
Thank you very much, Deputy Minister. Members, I know that people would like to ask questions, maybe. Can we allow Ms. Clark to give us the presentation, and then we are going to ask questions?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, in terms of the report, we looked at four legal models, and there's a lot of permutations to the legal models. But essentially, the four legal models that we've looked at were total criminalization, partial criminalization, non-criminalization, which is popularly referred to as decriminalization, and then regulation. For each one of these models, we looked at comparative analysis of countries and what has been happening with regards to developments in this area. And post the report, I've also kept abreast of developments in this area. With regards to total criminalization, that is currently the case in South Africa. An example of total criminalization also is present in most states in the United States, except for Nevada. With regards to our neighboring countries, adult prostitution is criminalized in Namibia, Botswana, Malawi, Zimbabwe, Zambia, Burundi, Cameroon, Central African Republic, The Gambia, Liberia, Morocco, and Sierra Leone. In terms of an update, I was able to update as of 1st of November 2016. As of this date, prostitution is fully criminalized in Tanzania, Kenya, Uganda, Nigeria, Ghana, Zimbabwe, and Malawi. And they've confirmed that this is a position. Most of these countries have also recently enacted legislation to combat trafficking, including trafficking for sexual purposes. Common themes in our neighboring countries, identify high levels of gender-based violence and exploitation amidst poverty and unemployment. And in a number of these countries, implementation of legislation and corruption was identified as problematic. And there's been quite a spike in child prostitution and sex tourism. Only in Zimbabwe has a debate around legislative change emerged recently, but there's no indication as to which way it will go at this point in time. Abuse by police in Zimbabwe against prostitutes has recently successfully been addressed through litigation against the police, with a positive effect being experienced by prostitutes. With regards to partial criminalization, the example that is most popularly used is in Sweden. But partial criminalization has different permutations, and the one is where you criminalize the buyer and all other role players, excluding the person selling sexual services, and this is what takes place in Sweden. In the United Kingdom, however, it's also partial criminalization, where the buyer and the seller are not criminalized, but all related activity is criminalized. Then with regards to non-criminalization, the example most popularly used is that of New Zealand, but this seems to be more regulation or legalization as opposed to decriminalization, as they do make exceptions. For example, if you are a citizen, you may sell sexual services, but if you are not a citizen, you may not. And there's certain prohibitions, for example, around advertising and the like. Then with regards to regulation, you have examples such as in Germany and in and the Netherlands. So with your permission, I will just go through a couple of the countries, if that's in order. Thank you. I think up front, I think one needs to keep current, and with regards to France, for example, they've just recently moved towards the Nordic or the Swedish model. So as of 6th of April 2016, they've adopted the Swedish model, where they only have the seller or the person selling sexual services is not criminalized. All other activity is criminalized. The legislation that they passed on the 6th of April 2016 details the vulnerability of prostitutes and the increase in trafficking of foreign women and the abuse involved. Essentially, they have found that violence is inherent in prostitution. In Ireland, as of September 2016, there's also a move towards the Swedish model. It is important to note that they have a social system which allows for grants for working age adults, which we do not have here. And the aim, for example, both in France and in Ireland, is to move towards an exit model. And this demonstrates that due to exploitation, which seems to be inherent in prostitution, the legislative pendulum seems to be swinging back towards an interventionist approach. In the United Kingdom, as of the 1st of November yesterday, the update is that the UK Home Affairs Select Committee is conducting a two-year review of the law. An interim report was published in July 2016, which leans towards decriminalisation. However, the chairperson of this committee was caught paying for sex in September 2016, and he has been replaced. The new chairperson is historically in favour of the Nordic or Swedish model, and there are indications that the interim report of July will be withdrawn, and this debate is ongoing. With regards to specific examples, in terms of the four models which were identified by the Law Reform Commission, I will go to partial criminalisation, and that is in Sweden. So the current legal position in Sweden is an example of where the prostitute is not criminalised, but all other role players involved in prostitution are criminalised. In Sweden, prostitution is regarded as an aspect of male violence against women and children, a form of exploitation of women and children, and as a symptom of inequality between the sexes. So as of 1999, it has been illegal under the Swedish Penal Code to buy sexual services. In 2009, both Norway and Iceland enacted similar laws, followed by Finland, Israel, and United Kingdom. Korea has partly enacted similar laws. France, as I say, has actually moved towards that in April of this year. In Sweden, the offence of prostitution was originally sanctioned with a fine of imprisonment for up to 6 months. Effective from 1 July 2011, the maximum penalty was revised upwards to 1 year's imprisonment to reflect the heightened priority of the crime. And the offence covers all forms of sexual services, whether purchased outdoors, indoors, in saunas, or in massage parlours. I've touched briefly on what has happened in the United Kingdom, so I won't go over that again. In terms of Canada, there's been quite an active debate going on. There has been litigation all the way up to the Supreme Court of Appeal. And in 2014, Parliament in Canada amended the Canadian Criminal Code by enacting the Protection of Communities and Exploited Persons Act in response to the Supreme Court of Canada decision in Attorney General of Canada versus Bedford. In the preamble of the Act, the Parliament in Canada expressed its grave concerns about the exploitation that is inherent in prostitution and the risks of violence posed to those who engage in it. It further recognizes the social harm caused by the objectification of the human body and the commodification of sexual activity and the need to protect human dignity and the equality of all Canadians by discouraging prostitution, which has a disproportionate impact on women and children. It stresses the importance of denouncing and prohibiting the purchase of sexual services because it creates a demand for prostitution and the importance of continuing to denounce and prohibit the procurement of persons for prostitution. It concludes with encouraging those who engage in prostitution to report incidents of violence and to leave prostitution. I won't go into the specifics of the Act there, but it is available. Then in terms of non-criminalization, or what is known as decriminalization, we have New Zealand as an example. The Prostitution Reform Act...
Sorry, ma'am. Because of time constraints, I would really request you to summarize. The document is so weak, and the members have got the document with them. They can ask questions pertaining what is written in the document. But if you could just summarize for us. And Deputy Minister, you told us about the cabinet and everybody. We want to have the perspective of what is happening in South Africa. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, New Zealand is an example of non-criminalization. As I said, they do not allow non-citizens to act selling sexual services in the country, so there are certain restrictions in place. In terms of the comparison, you have a population of about 4 million people. They do not have porous borders, so there is quite a difference in terms of the context there. In terms of regulation, you have examples of Australia, one country, Victoria. You also have Germany as an example and the Netherlands. What is interesting in terms of the modern trend is that, for example, in Germany, they found it has not been an uptake of people registering as prostitutes and being able to work in prostitution as employment. They have seen it as not as work as any other. They confirm that there is an increase in trafficking in the country. So too in the Netherlands, and with that, Netherlands has made a decision in terms of they've been using their Public Administration Screening Act, and they have decided to revoke licenses of windows in the De Wallen. The majority were held by a handful of owners, some of whom had known criminal connections. So there seems to be a buying back of windows in the Netherlands to try and reinstate urban rejuvenation and to combat trafficking. Also, legislation aimed at crime prevention in the Netherlands is important and was tabled in the Dutch Parliament in May 2011, but the debate is ongoing there. So that is essentially just an overview of what's happening across the world. In terms of the request to present on the people who had been involved or had been engaged on in terms of our processes, we had 8 workshops in urban and rural areas. We had many focused meetings. SWET arranged focused meetings with women that are involved in adult sex work. We had focused meetings with a number of organizations and with individuals who didn't feel able to be part of the bigger groups. We had women who have exited from prostitution. We have met with brothel owners, ex-brothel owners. In terms of our list, we have a total, in terms of just the discussion paper, we had a combined 1,761 individuals and organizations who made submissions. These submissions were endorsed by a further 889 individuals or organizations, bringing the total to 2,650. The names include interest groups of different perspectives, for example, SWET, the Commission for Gender Equality, the Legal Resources Centre, Doctors for Life, Family Policy Institute, people who provide sexual services, people who have exited, organisations facilitating exit, brothel keepers, ex-brothel keepers, including Ellen Jordan, who exited after the Jordan judgment in 2002. So some persons who have been involved and have exited have requested anonymity and are reflected as such in the report, but each individual and each organisation's name is listed in the report as an annexure.
Thank you very much. Maybe let me correct my mistakes before I allow people to ask questions. I think the slide has disturbed you. When I was talking about ministers, I was looking for the very person I'm going to introduce now. We acknowledge the presence of the Deputy Speaker of Northwest, Umamu J. Now, we are going to allow for questions.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thanks for the presentation. When you're actually looking at the categories of criminalization, you said it was total, partial, none, and regulation. And then you go on to say under total is United States, with the exception of Nevada. And then you later then called other African states, them, Malawi, Kenya, and you said there was criminalization. What's the difference? Before I ask my, before I comment and ask other questions.
I think Honourable Majake would want to ask another question. Should she not get a quick answer to that question, then she can ask her second question. Okay.
Chair, I would very much to like to assist you, but I think the system we're using is fine. They will ask questions. We have got Majake and Majake here. I guess.
Yes, Chairperson.
Yeah, Majake and Majake.
Yes.
So, this is our Mr. Chairperson of the House first, and then we have the other Majake.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and thanks for the report. It's not really a question, but rather I was going to suggest that we note the report. And then when we receive our report, we can then deliberate with the background understanding of what is happening in other countries and then decide what would be better for South Africa. It's a bit limiting now because we'll be discussing in general what happens elsewhere without having seen our own report on the investigation that was done and the recommendations that were made.
Thank you, Chairperson. Somehow I'm a bit covered because when I looked into the report, I see South Africa under total criminalization and other additional African countries. And the report, the more details are more on countries like New Zealand, United Kingdom, etc., etc. And then I wanted a deeper comparison of an African country which is similar to South Africa, but what the chairperson of the House is saying, I think it is more appropriate that we wait until everything is done and then we can do our summary of questions. Thank you. welcome Honorable Robinson, and you allow me.
Thank you. My turn. Thank you very much indeed. I was interested in your report, but I'm really sorry that it was cut short. I think that we need more detail. But while I understand what the Honourable Dedeza says, that we need to know what's happening in our own country, I support that. But I'm really concerned that this matter has been pushed back again. Why do we have to wait until closer to the end of the year? You know, the lives of women are in danger. We know that trafficking is increasing, criminalization and all those things, and I really feel that this is something that should not be put on the back burner, but on the front burner, because the situation within South Africa, we know the 16 days of activism is coming again, but what do we actually achieve? We have speeches, we have messages, we have events. So I think something like this, bringing the report forward so that we can take action one way or the other, would be something really significant to improve the lot of women who are vulnerable and who suffer from predatory individuals. Thank you.
Thank you. We are going to come back to you, sir. I'm told that you wanted to add something.
No, I just wanted to just comment in general, to say that indeed the matter has been in the public discourse for quite some time. And indeed, we do acknowledge the kind of abuses that are actually taking place that impact on the lives of sex workers. At the same time, there's various platforms that are actually debating this. Some are actually looking at it from the moral perspective, religious perspective, human rights perspective. But at the end of the day, as a country, we need to look at the extent we can be in the position to help protect even the rights of sex workers.
Can you come for the second round? I just wanted... Can you come for the second round? Is that fine with you? Are you the only one? Okay, come in then.
Thank you, Deputy Minister. Is it possible that we can share the information with us on the issues that you have raised with individual interviewees that you had? What is the broad outlook? Because you just mentioned the groups that you have interviewed, but you don't say exactly what it is that you find out, so that when we read further on these other countries, we are able to know in our country, this is the view in terms of the people that are affected, this is how they think, you know, before the decision is taken by cabinet. But at the same time, as the committee, we need to know what is it that you find out. You do have that document, by the effort that you compile the document. What is entailed there, as a summary? I'm not sure if it's going to take time, Chairperson, but just to share the information with us. Thank you.
I don't think it will take time, actually. I think that is quite sensible. I'm going to allow the Deputy Minister to respond.
Thanks, Chair. Look, yes, this has taken, or is taking, because we're still in the process, this is taking a long time. But it's a complex issue, and if you look globally, there's no one solution. We cannot release the report with all the detail, but I think I have already said on a previous occasion that in fact the Law Reform Commission report is not particularly positive towards the question of decriminalization. I think it's important not to, Mrs. Robinson, it is Mrs. Robinson, yes, to you, sorry. I think it's important not to politicize it in that, for example, trafficking is already illegal. The involvement of children in sex is illegal. So there's already laws to prohibit that. A lot of the problems relate to the non-enforcement of laws. For example, municipal bylaws, where you have people soliciting on the streets. That's, I think, in most places, contrary to municipal bylaws. So, you know, those laws can be more enforced. Obviously, you've then got the problem of the impact on the sex workers. So I think the problem with enforcing anti-soliciting laws is the whole issue of arresting sex workers if they have condoms as evidence. That was sort of raised by Sweat some time before. I'm not sure if it's still a problem, but the result of that then being the sex workers would go looking for clients without condoms and then be exposing themselves. We have, through the National AIDS Council, an extensive program for sex workers in terms of prevention and health treatment. So the current law is not a restriction on government running programs to try and assist sex workers. But the issue is it's a difficult thing. I mean, from those that came late, I mean, the cabinet position is release the report with some form of direction so that that can guide the debate, the resultant debate that will happen. Because obviously the report has to be debated. The issue has to be debated more. But rather than just putting it out into the public domain, to be able to say, as the executive, this is the proposed route that we think South Africa should be taking, so that can serve as the sort of central point for the debate. That's basically what it is. But I think there are a lot of other areas. There's no restriction on else discussing the matter, Honourable House Chairperson, and coming up with a viewpoint. The Law Reform Commission report is just research, although it's obviously quite extensive research. I don't know what the position of different political parties is. As far as I know, the majority party, the African National Congress, hasn't a position on the matter, although I think the Women's League National Executive expressed support for decriminalisation. I'm not sure, Mrs. Robinson, whether the DA, as the largest opposition party, has a position. But there's nothing, you know, the issue needs to be debated, but unfortunately it's not, it's a complex issue. So maybe just to raise that as a general response.
The Honourable Member asked for clarity just with regards to the African countries and in terms of legislation. I think if you look at models, the majority of African countries that we looked at follow a criminalised model, which means that the buying and selling and all related behaviour relating to prostitution is criminalised. What is a trend across Africa is the enactment recently of trafficking legislation, which is interesting, to combat sex tourism and trafficking of people, which seems to be increasing. Each country has their own specific challenge. There are differences. One always needs to look at context. But the reason why it hasn't been fleshed out more is because it follows almost an identical model of total criminalization. Then with regards to the Honourable Member's request, about the findings in South Africa and the interviews, I think across the board we have found that irrespective of which model people support, we found that we had very focused views on which models different interest groups follow. But across the board, irrespective of whether it came from a religious grouping or from a grouping working directly with adult sex workers such as SWEC, there is exploitation. And we have found that in South Africa, prostitution is driven by a very complex intersection of social and economic factors. in which poverty, unemployment, and inequality are really our key drivers, all issues that are raised in our NDP. So that really are there was no question around what the key drivers were. Currently, too, in South Africa, we have no national strategy to assist anyone out of prostitution. We don't have a social service network for working age people in South Africa. In terms of the report itself, for this reason, we not only looked at legislative interventions, but we looked at non-legislative interventions too. Almost, I suppose, low-hanging fruit that one could implement quite quickly to try and address some of the concerns that have been raised. Essentially, the debate centers around three main topics. The main topics are, is prostitution work or is it exploitation? The second topic that really is highlighted a lot is access to healthcare and HIV, which our Deputy Minister has referred to, HIV treatment. And the third one is arbitrary arrest and exploitation. So those three issues are really key issues in the South African debate we have found from where we stand in terms of research. And the use of terminology is also important, because when one refers to something as work, for example, in terms of what has happened in the ILO, is it decent work? Is it decent work in terms of our own strategy in the country? If we're talking about work, do you automatically get a labor protection? And that would not seem to be the case with the majority of people working as independent contractors, so therefore you do not obtain the rights that are allowed for someone that falls within under the Labor Relations Act, for example. So no, there's no pension. No, there's no UIF. None of those protections come into play if one defines it as work. And the reason why I refer to the word prostitution is so that we didn't want to take a policy decision as such, and that is why the use in the report also refers to that. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Clark. You're going to come again. Really, I wanted someone from both of you, Deputy Minister. If you can just unpack this issue of partial criminalization. I'm interested in the buyer and seller. Mm-hmm. If what are the implications of this? And you know that the other thing that is bothering me is that the workshop held by the multi-party in Parliament expressed very strong views for decriminalization. And I'm concerned that what is the South African law reform saying about this after they had the submissions and the consultations? I think Honorable Pet was asking precisely for that reason.
Thank you. Just in response to Minister Jeffries, just wanted to say I'm not by any means politicizing. This is something that affects women throughout the country, wherever we are, and throughout the world. So all I'm saying is, while we have a state where arbitrary arrest still happens all the time, where there is violence, yes, you do provide some health care and so on, but I feel that women are increasingly vulnerable. So my only appeal is, let's get moving on this. Let's not put it on the back burner and postpone it to December and then possibly into May or whatever. This is something that the women of South Africa and we as their representatives should be insisting on. It's a matter of extreme importance. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. From a process note, if I may ask from the Deputy Minister, will it be wrong to have the Women's Multi-Party Caucus have a workshop on the report that has been done, and then part of the outcomes of the report may also inform the direction in which cabinet may go in this regard. I'm just asking whether will it be arbitrary if that report would be discussed by the multi-party committee, even though it was commissioned by the department.
No other question.
Thanks, Chair. Maybe just responding to the House Chair first. The Law Reform Commission produces work for the executive. I suppose that's something we could look into, but the difficulty is if Cabinet is not wanting to release the report until there's a commonly agreed Cabinet direction, then it becomes difficult to release it to the multi-party women's group, but particularly if it's in public. And it's the kind of thing that should be in public. It would be very good for that to happen as soon as the report is released. It would be an excellent forum to debate the issues. So I think that's it would probably be better that immediately once the report is released, then such a workshop be held. Then just to assure Mrs. Robinson that it's not something that's been postponed and put on the back burner. There's a lot of work, and I think, you know, because of the contentious nature of the issue, there have been a lot of it has been to Cabinet, it has been to other structures. The latest memo which is going has been through different drafts, so it's not something that's just sitting back and nobody's doing anything about it. It will be going to Cabinet again before the end of the year, but whether it is then finalized depends on whether there's agreement on a decision to be taken. So that's really what I was saying. But it's not as if it's just sitting, gathering dust. Work is being done on it. But I don't want to get into a debate with you, there's a lot of work that can be done. I mean, arbitrary arrests, the question would be again depending on which locality, because I'm not aware of much going on as far as prosecution of sex workers. So if there are arbitrary arrests, which area, let's engage with the police, the prosecuting authority, on why those are taking place, particularly if they're not actually prosecuting. Assault is illegal. Trafficking is illegal. Child sex, as I said, is illegal. So those are all things that are currently, you know, there's no need to change the law because the law is already tight on that matter. And then I think just to, without being able to sort of go into the details of what's in the report, as I had said, the report is not particularly positive on the issue of decriminalisation. So I think that the answer would be, in spite of all those interviews and everything, it's not as if people mustn't see this as we're sitting on a report that's recommending the decriminalisation of sex work. We're not.
Thank you, Jefferson. I think what's important is to actually, maybe for our caucus to know the report, even if we haven't actually seen the contents of the report, Deputy Minister, it becomes actually also difficult to deal with the report that you haven't actually seen. And then you are indicating that the report is not particularly positive when it comes to decriminalization of sex work. And I'm thinking, I was not part of the other workshop, which you have actually alluded to, that actually came to the conclusion that decriminalization might be the way. But I think we need to continue to put forward the position that that workshop actually came up with. I think it's a position that maybe is advocating for decriminalization of sex work, and of course also taking into consideration issues of regulating it so that, you know, it doesn't actually cause problems within areas. The bylaws will be there to take it. And also noting that we are discussing and debating this in an environment that is actually heavily affected by gender-based violence, trafficking of women who are actually made sex slaves, which are things that needs to be considered moving forward. And when you were presenting, you indicated that in some countries they're saying only citizens can be can actually engage in sex work. And it's things like that that we need to actually consider. Because remember, for now, South Africa is grappling with so much of migrants because of the fact that they are coming here to look for greener pastures. Is this not going to open up that market to find that you have so many people coming from all over Africa, coming into South Africa to want to become sex workers and overcrowding that market? But I think it's all of these things, child prostitution and things, that we need to take into consideration as we move forward so that whatever position we adopt takes all of these factors into consideration so that it can then therefore allow us to come up with a position that might be suitable.
Okay. Can I make a rider deputy on to what Honorable Chana said and say if when the report release the last bullet of questions that we had into the public domain and the recommendations are not favorable to civil society organizations which are in support of decriminalization of sex work, what avenues then are available to them to challenge the report?
Chair, can I answer? Is there any more? No. Okay. Look, the report is just a report. It's research. It does make, as it always does, legislative amendments, changes to the law. What would need to happen when the report is made public is that there is a debate on the issue. I think that the issue that Honorable Didiza raised, I think, is a crucial one. We were, in terms of envisaging when the report was released, having a workshop with the media, for example, to go through the report and how they arrived at those findings. There would need to be extensive engagement with civil society to say, okay, this is what the report says. I mean, this is the report's findings. What's your then response to that? So it's not as if this is an ongoing process and a long process. I think everybody has probably agreed across the board, I don't know if Ms. Clark can confirm it or not, that there is legislative reform necessary. What form that takes is something else. And across the world, that is what is happening. You know, and some things may be valid in a developed country where there is less poverty, which may not be applicable to a country such as ours. The issue that was raised around foreigners not being able to be sex workers is New Zealand, where, as Ms. Clark said, I mean, as you know, it's an island. So you don't have a porous border. It's very difficult to get to New Zealand. Whereas in South Africa, with porous borders, with a lot of migrants, economic migrants to South Africa, looking for better opportunities, we would never be able to enforce that kind of restriction. I mean, it would be practically impossible to do. And how does one then stop an increase in economic migrants, because that's a way that people can make some money? those are all things to grapple with. But I think, Chair, just to assure you, the committee, and I think everybody else, that the releasing the report is not the end of the matter. It's just the next stage. And it would be the desire to release it with some kind of direction to try and guide that debate. The debate carries on, and I think it would be very useful to one of the important bodies to have a workshop with the Multi-Party Women's Caucus.
Would you like to say something? Okay. I think we have exhausted the issue of the report so far, and I can assure you, Deputy Minister, that we'll keep on advocating for decriminalization as the Multi-Party Women's Caucus, because, as you have said already, we cannot say when will the cabinet deal with this. But as public representatives, we have to take whatever is said by civil society and all the other organizations into consideration. So we will be advocating for decriminalization, and we'll wait for the report. And I've heard a lot of women who want to have motions on this in Parliament, and we are going to make statements and even ask the chair if we can debate at some stage. Yes. Thank you very much. Can we go to the second item, the last and the second? The presentation by the Chair of the House on Commonwealth Parliamentarian Strategic Plan. But I don't know whether it's a whole presentation. You are going to be dealing with the principle of the chapter.
Not really, Chair. The strategic plan is ready for it to be shared among members. Because we talked about it last time. Thank you very much, Chairperson. Really, the issue today is about the formalization of setting up a Commonwealth Women Parliamentarian Chapter. In the last meeting, we agreed that the steering committee of the Multi-Party Women's Caucus are going to reflect on the modalities, on how we would best do it. The issue we raised in the last meeting, which we would hope that the steering committee will consider, was that in terms of the approaches adopted by different countries, where you have got a branch, which has been lodged in our case, last year, August, as part of the organ of the branch in terms of the CPA is the Commonwealth Women Parliamentarians, is the SOCAT, which is the Society of Clerks. In South Africa, we've got one branch, which is the National Parliament, and we've got 9 sub-national branches, which is all the provinces. Provinces are full members in their own right to the CPA, both CPA Africa Region and CPA International. Provinces also do have their organs, which is the CWP organ. And those also have got their own constitutive structures in the various provinces. What we were raising is that after the launch of the South African CPA branch, the women's chapter has not launched. So we were appealing to the Women's Caucus that that should happen. There are 2 approaches which countries take. Other countries convert their multi-party Women's Caucus to actually also do the CWP work. And in those instances, they'll either have a subcommittee of the Women's Caucus who will focus on the Commonwealth parliamentary work. In other countries, parallel to the Women's Caucus, they set up a Commonwealth Women parliamentary structure. In our view, we thought, which is what we recommended last time, what we are asking the steering committee to reflect on, is that instead of having duplicate structures, let's rather take an approach where the multi-party women's caucus becomes the CWP chapter, but it then has a subcommittee whose main focus will be looking at the CWP work going forward. So I just wanted to, again, make that proposition. And if it's so agreed, we can then, together with yourself, Chair, and the Women's Committee led by Honorable Memela, work towards the launch of the Women's Parliamentary Forum chapter in South Africa before the end of the term. Just to share with members that in the past month, we visited KZN legislature. Its multi-party women's caucus decided that they will be the one that spearheads the work of the CWP. So it was launched during their workshop. And one of the things they did in partnership with UNDP was to look at the operationalization of the Sustainable Development Goals, particularly Goal 5 that deals with gender equality, to look at how they would, within their legislature, monitor the implementation of the sustainable goals. We also visited Swaziland, who also have actually formed their chapter, and they were looking at how they could review their legislation to ensure that they improve the lives of women, but also to start to plan for 2018 national elections in Swaziland so that they can actually increase women representation. So they were looking at having a workshop before the end of the year where they are going to work out a strategy that involves women in parliament but also women in civil society organizations so that they can strategize on how they could increase their representation in parliament come the elections 2018. We also visited Lesotho, who, as we know, are going through a little bit of political turbulence at the stage, but also looking at how they can best work within the multi-party caucus to set up their CWP structure. We went to Namibia, which has actually launched their CWP chapter. They have opted for a different position where they've got an independent structure away from the multi-party, women's multi-party caucus. It's functioning well for them. They do cooperate. But they are actually having programs going forward. So I think in our case, really what we will appeal for from the Women's Caucus is to come to finality on this matter and have a launch. So I think what we can discuss now is really what is the choice that we would like to make in South Africa. We have circulated the strategic plan of the Commonwealth Parliamentarians Africa region, which is from 2016 to 2020. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Chair of the House. I don't know whether I want to contribute to this. Honorable Second.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you, Honorable Didiza. Chair, we want to thank the detailed report of strategic planning as it has been circulated, because the last time when Honorable Didiza presented, there was no detailed guiding document for the launch. But we appreciate, and I think we'll go through the document so that we can acclimatize ourselves with the content of the document. But further, I think as the meeting, we have to confirm the proposal that we had in the previous meeting of making sure that we should not duplicate the structures in Parliament. Unfortunately, Honorable Titiza, members of the Portfolio Committee on Women are also members of the Steering Committee. So it's going to be good for both the chairperson of the multi-party and Honorable Memela, who's the chair of the PC on women, to work together in preparation for the launch of this year of this chapter. I think let's confirm the proposal as we have agreed upon it in the previous meeting, so that we can be able to move forward with the issue. Thank you.
Honorable Seke, welcome to Nkosazana Dlamini and Nkosazana Khumzile. Does anyone want to come in and say something? Because I think Honorable Seke has made a very good contribution to this. What are we saying then? After this, we are accepting. And are we accepting the proposal by second?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, you must also take into consideration that it must go to the steering committee, which the steering committee comprises of both committees. Yeah. And we come up with a date then. And after we have decided the date, I just want to say to people, we've got members. After you've got the date, you can consult chairperson, because me now will only be back on the 15th of this month. So I don't want to stagnate anything. We agree that we and the other members will deal with this process. And also Nomamu Memen Uzabena. Siyabonga. Siyabonga kakhulu. Umama Robertson, we are Sivani. We have Bagalu. We are Sazi Sosa. And then that means then we have come to the end of the agenda. The next item is closure. Thank you very much.
Thank you, ma'am.
Yeah, no, it was before the launch, yeah.